If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful day, week, month, whatever. We're on the podcast again, and this week I have the one and only Joanna Barber. Jo is my agent in the UK, in Europe. She's great. I've worked with her just over a year, maybe nearly 2 years coming up. Obviously, we've had COVID in between hand, so that kind of sucks for everyone. But I love Jo. We kind of got working together, and the first time we met was in Berlin, which is where she lives, and just like got an amazing vibe from her. She's great. Met her husband Neil, who's an amazing producer as well, and yeah, we just got on really well. And I really wanted to get her on the podcast, and I've wanted to get her on the podcast for a while, but it kind of felt right when the clubs start opening up, especially in the UK and Europe as well. So yeah, we got her on and had a great conversation. She's amazing. She's doing some amazing things as well outside of being an agent for the industry with mental health, addiction. And also she's become a personal trainer as well and just doing loads of things. And I love just having people around me that are bettering, always constantly trying to better their lives. And she's killing it at the moment. So without further ado, Joanna Barber. We're live. Joanna, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Back to America. I can't hear myself for some reason.
Oh, no.
I know, it's weird.
And where are you now, Detroit?
I'm in Detroit, in the hood.
Yeah, nice.
It's actually hot as fuck at the moment over
is
here.
It?
Yeah.
As in what sort of temperature are we talking?
Like 30, 32 degrees.
Oh, dream. do you like the hot weather?
No, I hate it.
It's because of the beard.
You just
get sweaty in a beard.
I think I was like made to live in like Iceland or Sweden or somewhere just really fucking cold. Because when it snows here, it's amazing.
I am the exact opposite.
Yeah,
like I was destined to live in like the Middle East. And considering I am literally the palest person in the world who burns quicker than anyone. And I was like, I am literally like, give me 40 degree heat and let me lie in the sun all day. But obviously when I do that, I just damage my skin massively.
Do you like the burn?
I do. I do love the burn. I love the burn. Like I even like, you think I would have grown out of this? Sorry, my cat is scrapped. No, try not to do this while I'm on this. Thank you. You would have thought that I would have grown out of fake tanning, but I still fake tan because I just love a tan. And it's like, Joanna, like, I'm 38, you know, like, just get over it. You're pale. Come to terms with the fact you're never going to be a bronzed, you know, like, Greek Adonis or whatever. So it's just like, just embrace the paleness, but I can't. I just love a tan.
I want to talk about fake tan.
We can talk about fake tan.
Why the fuck does it smell of feet?
Well,
like, okay, and before we stop, I'm talking for every male out here right now. There's every single girl is like, I have a new fake tan that doesn't smell bad. They all smell terrible.
They all smell bad. They might come with like a hint of coconut underneath the smell of feet and biscuits.
Biscuits, yes, it is.
Yeah. It is biscuits. Yeah. It's like digestive biscuits. If you're not from the UK, I mean, digestive biscuits, do they have them anywhere else?
Just the UK.
The driest, shittest biscuits in the world. And I could literally go for an entire packet.
Yeah, you can nail them all day long.
Yeah. And are they sweet or are they savory?
They're both. Because you have to have them with cheese as well.
Yeah, have them with cheese. But I would literally just eat Dunkin' tea, like one by one. But anyway, fake tan. So we have to schedule in my fake tannins with when we're changing like the bed sheets. And I'm like, right, okay. Because it covers the bed sheets. And the best time to do it is before you go to bed, obviously. And I also get my husband involved. And he is now the best fake tanner ever. He like fills in all the bits. I just stand there like this, naked, just spinning around while he fills in all the white bits. And but we have to like it has to be on a schedule because it stinks so badly. But he's woken up with like a fake tan like across his stomach before, where laid with my arm on him and he's like got a massive like strip of brown.
Orange.
Like,
it's not brown though, is it? Let's be honest, it's orange.
Well, no, my fake tan's good. I use Bondi Sands.
See, there we go. There we go. We had it. My fake tan's the best.
It is the best. I have actually tried a few others since being in Berlin because. My one's quite hard to get here, and they're just not as good.
No.
Berlin
is like anyway, pale, though.
I love a fake tan. And you probably wouldn't even notice if you met me, because I'm actually so pale that even the fake tan doesn't even look like I'm tanned. And I come back from holidays paler than when I went, because I fake tan when I go. And when we were on honeymoon for 2 weeks, I fake tanned while I was in India. I was like, you're going to have to leave. I just need to stand here for like an hour with my fake tan. And my husband was like, why don't you just go on the beach outside? Yeah. I was like, it doesn't work.
Yeah, anyway. I was in Mexico a couple of weeks ago and I got sunstroke because I'm not a fan of sitting in the sun. But I was like, okay, Will, like, have some time out, put some sun cream on, go sit in the sun for like an hour or two. And I never put sun cream on my legs because my legs are so hairy. So I'm like, they never catch the sun, ever, ever.
Schoolboy era.
Like, they were red as fuck.
I bet they were.
Yeah.
I bet they were. Your poor skin.
I know, they were bad. And it was rough.
I bet it was. Like, you literally can't do anything when you're sunburned. Like, putting on a pair of jeans, it's a no. Oh. Like, 100% no. I've been really badly sunburned before, and even getting on a flight, and I'm like, when you put your suntan, I bet everyone's going to love this conversation, aren't they? We're like, oh, bore off with your suntan. but I've burned the underneath my bum before because you just don't rub it in properly. And sitting down, like trying to sit in a restaurant, I'm like, Ow.
And you've just got to go through it, don't you? There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, lots of moisturiser. But so my husband went to Mexico in April, played some gigs. And I gave him some after sun before he left. I was like, look, use the after sun while you're away. He came back and I was like, you are so brown. Like, this is a brown I've never seen on you before. Like, you're so deep brown. And he was like, yeah, I am, aren't I? I've got such a good tan. And then I looked at his hands. I was like, mate, let me see that after sun. So I took the after sun. It was like I had a hint of fake tan in it.
No.
And he'd been like flapping it on. And so he was like proper streaky on his legs, all in between his fingers, like completely brown. And he'd been putting it on lows towards the end of the holiday where he'd been getting more in the sun. And he literally came back and he did have the deepest tan you've ever seen because he had been fake tanning inadvertently while he'd been there. And it was just so streaky. And I was like, oh, I need you to give you some more lessons on how to do this.
do you like fake tan nights where you fake tan each other now? And you just
he wouldn't let me fake tan it. And annoyingly, he goes really brown.
Does he?
He's got like a permatan. It's not fair.
Yeah.
But he claims he's got like some Spanish heritage, but I don't know if that's true. I mean, you've met him. He doesn't look that Spanish. He's a Scouser.
He's a Scouse. There's not much Spanish in Scouse, let's be honest.
No.
How's life anyway?
Good. Testing at times, Will, for sure. I know that obviously, well, for people that don't know, I am your agent in Europe. And it's been a weird year, isn't it? For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. And I was actually obviously thinking about this podcast before we recorded it and like what I'd say and like, has it been a bad year? No, for sure. It's not been a bad year. Has it been a year, an unexpected year? Yes. Yeah. And has it just been a lot of like pivoting and a lot of like adapting and resilience and stuff? Yes. But right now, today, I'm very good. Obviously, pleased to be here. Honoured to be asked to do this.
Thanks for coming
on. Yeah. Good. But how are you? Because you're about playing gigs and I want to hear how they are. I've got questions for you on this podcast.
Yeah, ask away.
No, super jealous.
Life's great. It's kind of the same to what you were saying, really. Like, for me, lockdown was actually pretty amazing. Like, I got to spend time with my family that I hadn't spent that long in the UK with my family for like 6-7 years. So like,
and you need back like just as it all kicked off,
literally,
like the pandemic
kicked off.
Really, and was that because we were obviously planning like an EU tour anyway, so you were gonna come back for a bit, but was it always your plan just to like come back and just stay there for as long as you needed to lock down just to be with your parents or your family?
Yeah, literally.
I was like a conscious decision to do that.
Yeah, we had a show in Arizona, which was my last show of the tour, which was March the 14th. And then Ryan, as I was getting on the plane to go there, Ryan, my manager, for anyone that doesn't know, called and was like, mate, Trump's closing the borders on Monday. You best get a flight out on Sunday after your show and lock down there. So yeah, I didn't want to be locked down in America, really. But we didn't know. So I could have just flown back whenever. I just didn't know kind of how it would have panned out. But I was lucky.
Why didn't you want to lock down in America? So obviously that's where you've been living for such a long time. Like that's where like your base is and stuff. But is it like, I mean, you tell me. There's no point me guessing.
I just wanted to be back home. I love it. Okay, I love it back in the UK, really. I love living in America. Detroit is like, I have this like love-hate relationship with Detroit.
Same as me for Berlin.
Yeah, it's not as much as it is my home, it's not home. And it never will be. Nowhere ever will be, if that makes sense. Unless it was like New York, maybe, because I just love New York. But it's still, I don't know. I don't know how you feel, because obviously you're from the UK and being locked down in Berlin and being kind of away from family and things like that and friends. I don't know how you felt about it, but I think being back home was just like important for me.
You know what? I think if I didn't have Neil, I probably would have been, but we're really tight, you know, like we're a very close couple, we're really good friends.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I didn't feel it was so bad. And like, do you know what? I feel because as well, I moved over here. It's not as though I've been going to an office every day to work. Like I quite work on my own anyway, quite a lot work on my own anyway. Like I work from home or go to my co-working space. It wasn't like I was surrounded by a team every day. So in terms of like that, it didn't really change. Yeah. And I'd gone, like when I moved to Berlin, like I'm not great at making friends at all. Neil's amazing.
That
at
surprises
friends,
me.
But, no, I'm just very cautious and I can get really shy actually, really shy. And I've made some really shockingly bad friends in the past, which I've just been like, why have I been friends with you? You're rubbish.
Yeah.
Lots of people think I'm really rude when they first meet me, because I just sort of like get really quiet, don't know what to say. And even my friends in Berlin, they've just been like, yeah, I didn't know what to make of you because Neil's so outgoing and so lovely. Yeah. And I'm just standing there like,
hiya.
Like, Marmy Mike was like, oh, I don't trust you. Whereas Neil's like, I trust you, let's be friends immediately. Yeah. So I'd kind of, like we have friends over here, like we have some amazing friends, but it's not like I've got a massive friendship group. Like my big close friendship group is back in the UK. So I was already like in remote contact with them anyway, you know, so it didn't make any difference whether I was locked down here. And I wouldn't have gone back to the UK because I have Neil, I have my house here, this way I feel safe. We've also got two cats. I just kind of, it wasn't so bad. To be honest, like when lockdown first got announced, I was like, I get to have a break. I was like, oh, because I just joined NGE, who have been amazing throughout this entire pandemic. And I knew that I had a year of absolute hard graft ahead of me, like proving myself. I had targets that I'd made for myself, targets for the company. I was like, this is how much money I want to earn this year. If I make this much money for me, this means I have to make this much money for my artist. And I am going to go. And I was. And I was like, yes. And then when it was like, oh, we can't work, I was like, oh, what do you mean I get to have a lion every day? And was like, I get guilt-free days off, thinking it was only going to last like a month max. You know, we'll be back at work by May. If you told me then that it would be like almost 18 months later and we're still not back at full capacity, or in fact nowhere near it, I would have probably panicked. But at the time I was like, oh, I could take a couple of months off, go on then, like that's okay, like I'm all right financially, I can afford it and I would love to do it. And I kept saying to myself, I'd like the world just to stop for a bit so I can like get organized and get my shit together so then I can start at NGE. But
I've said it a lot during COVID and coming back from COVID. I think like for a lot of people, it was probably the best thing that happened to us. Obviously, like taking away all of the deaths and everything like that. But like, I think it's actually, if everyone's fit and healthy, I think it's probably the best thing that's happened for people, even if they've had struggles financially, mentally, and everything like that. I think it's a time where everyone just could reflect on life. I don't know if it helped you.
For sure. I mean, you probably know what I've been up to over lockdown. I don't know, I've told you anyway, but I've done so much. Like, I feel like I've grown so much. I feel like I've learned so much, not just about myself, but about actual things as well. Like, I'm surrounded by books that I'm reading right now, and I'm just like so into learning. And there has been some real growth. And I do think there's been like struggles for sure. Like, don't get me wrong, I've sat on my bed and cried hard. And it's been like testing, you know, Will, when you're working all your, well, I've been working 8 years now, and you probably work way longer towards your career, but, and to one day just come to a halt and you don't quite know what the future holds. Like, it is scary. But then you can either go one way and be like, this is fucking so scary and I don't know what to do, and just not get out of bed and not do anything. Or you can go the other way and say, yeah, this is scary, but it's also an opportunity. Maybe to do all the things that I've wanted to do. Like, Will, you, like, you know, from what I see, what I know, in fact, with you and your gigs that you're playing and stuff, like, the break has actually done you a world of good in terms of, like, your career, where you wanted to go with your music. And, so, you know, like, would I want to do 2020 again? Or I don't know, but would I want to take away what I've learned? Like, no.
Yeah, like, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, it's that catch 22. I think it's so important. Breaks are so important. And I've never actually been a person to take breaks personally. Like, I'm not a holiday person. I'm not somebody that would, like, the last time I went on holiday for longer than 4 days was probably when I was 15 with my parents.
Like, and that's so typical of a DJ. Like, they just, you know, like, I always say with my husband, like, I'm the other woman in the relationship. Like, his studio, his music, his everything comes first, and I'm just the affair that he has on the side. Like, it's his first love. And it's true. It is so true.
How is that, though? How is that? Sorry to butt in, but how is that being in a relationship with somebody that is like that? Because, like, I've always been that person. I've never been on the receiving side of it.
I'm not going to lie, Will, at times it is really hard and we've have fallen out hard. Like, I've now convinced him after 10 years that if he can come home 3 nights a week before 9 p.m, then I'm happy with it, you know? And so, and when I was in London, it was like, he would come in like 11 p.m. midnight, and I was getting up at 7 a.m. to go to work. So we were like ships in the night. And as we've got older, you know, more and more boundaries have come up. Like, you have to make time for us. When I was younger, I was just like, oh, I just love you so much. Do whatever you want. And as I've got older, I'm like, no, fuck off.
Yeah.
You will make time for me in your life. But at the same time, would I want him to change? Would I want him to be, you know, any less ambitious or any less driven or any less talented? Like, the pandemic for him as well, because yes, he DJs, but it's not his main job. He's also an engineer and he works with lots of people. And he, in the beginning, he was like, oh, I'm just going to take all the work I can, because it's definitely going to stop. And he's had the best year he's ever had of his career. Like, people booking him out like 2 months in advance for like a week at a time. And like, I just need you, like, name your price. And I'm like, oh, my love. Maybe I can be a lady.
Yeah, give up.
But would I want to take that away from him? Like, that drive and ambition, like, 100% no, you know. And for me to say, it's either me or the music. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be walking out that door, not the music, you know. Yeah, so it's part of him, even if it's hard to understand. But obviously me doing what I do as an agent makes it a lot easier for me to be empathetic towards what he does.
I guess you get it.
Like, yeah, I do. I do get it. But we did. I wasn't an agent when we met.
What were you?
I was clinging on with dear life to a job in advertising.
Okay.
I sold advertising space, and I'll be honest, like, I was all right at it, but I got fired from every job I ever had. But my recruitment agent, he loved me because he made so much money off me, because he just kept putting me in more roles. Like, yeah, go for this one. And like, always giving me amazing references. And I'll be in the job about a year and they'll be like, do you know what, Joe? You just keep calling in sick on a Monday, you're turning up for work late. No, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I was out at the weekend. And it was literally like my raving was the priority in my life. Yeah. So when I met Neil, and I remember I stayed at his house once, and he was like, go to work. And this is when he worked with Chris Lake.
Mm.
And he was like, yeah, I'm going to work. And I was like, oh, poor you. And he was like, why? I was like, well, don't you hate your job? He's like, no. I was like, you don't hate your job. He's like, no, I quite like my job. And I was like, that's weird. And I was like, I just actually couldn't believe that someone loved their job so much they would go to work between Christmas and New Year out of choice.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so strange. And it just got me thinking, like, maybe I should do something that I've actually got an interest in. And at that time, the only thing I had interest in was raving. So I was like, I know, why don't I want to get a job as an agent? And I can just rave for a living. Which I kind of did, but it does obviously change the whole dynamic of going to rave. Like, before, it was like, go to rave, take a couple of pills and sniff whatever, and get really shit-faced. And then suddenly I was like, oh yeah, I could do all of that, but I don't want to be that state. Yeah. I don't want to be like as wrecked as I used to get on the dance floor. I mean, slowly that did creep in a little bit as I got older, but not anymore.
You're like, are you fully sober now?
Not quite. I do have the odd night out. Like, I had a couple of beers in Lisbon, actually, when I went on holiday, which I never really enjoy. Like, I just get it. And then I'm like, I don't know why I bothered. Maybe like a handful of times. Like, I had a couple of things at Christmas. My brother got married last year. I had a glass of wine and a glass of champagne. But it's just not something that I particularly enjoy doing. I used to love feeling, like, fucked and out of control and just, like, yeah, just forget all my worries. Like, yeah, brilliant. Let's just go and get trashed. Spend all my money on getting fucked. And now I'm like, I literally can't imagine anything worse. I was like, why would I want to spend my money on that?
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, I work hard for my money. Like, why would I spend my time? My time is so precious. I'm never going to get this back. Like, why would I want to give 20 hours to Berkheim every weekend? Like, which it was.
What was the transition, though? What changed it?
So we've been in Berlin a year. And it was getting to the point, we were out a lot. Like, and I, when the people ask me, like, why did you move to Berlin? I was like, oh, because London, you know, it's so expensive. And like, this is all a lie. I just wanted to rave really hard and not go to work on a Monday. I wanted to design my own life so I could just do whatever I wanted without getting told off and getting in trouble.
Mm.
So I moved away from the city where my job was. And they were like, yeah, you can work remotely. I was like, great, perfect. I guess it kind of worked because I did get to design my own life. And when I work really, really hard, but I just didn't want to work Mondays. So we were out every weekend, and I have always had like a few battles with my mental health from like quite a young age. And we moved to a new city. I was out all the time, taking a lot of drugs, basically, like out a lot, like lots of sleep deprivation. I'm struggling to find my feet in the city as well. Berlin's quite a hard city to integrate into. Yeah. Germans, if anyone's watching, I love you, but I also hate you at the same time. Like, you're so hard to get along with. And definitely as a, I don't know, like just as a foreigner in the city, then they're not particularly welcoming, although I have some great German friends. But yeah, like people are just grumpy.
It's a very harsh city, isn't it? It's a very harsh city.
It's stuck in the 90s, and when you move from the convenience of London, where everything's so easy, and you come over here and like you can't even pay with your bank card, and you're like, we're gonna take this type of bank card, or you have to get cash. And I'm like, oh, go to the cash point. Oh, it cost me £5 to get my €5 to get my €20 out. It's like, this is so frustrating. Like, why can't it just be easier? So anyway, we were raving every weekend. It got to the point where I was getting home from nights out, and I was actually bursting into tears, and I couldn't really work out why. And I was like, this is really weird. And then I started getting really ill, like physically ill. Mm. I had various ailments, which I couldn't get rid of. And I was in Bergheim once, like in the corner of Panorama Bar, like crouched over because I had such a bad stomach ache. Just like, oh, it's fine. I'll just drink more ketamine. I'll be better with it. And like,
always helps.
It did the job. It did the job. It's definitely a pain reliever, but obviously it doesn't actually fix me. Mm. So, and it just got to the point where I was just like, what am I doing? Like, what am I actually doing? Like, I'm consistently not showing up as my best self, like day to day, like almost every day. Like, I'm struggling in so many areas of my life. Like, the only thing that's not struggling is my social life. That was like amazing. Yeah. And I just said to myself, like, enough is enough. Like, you've been battling with your mental health for years, and I'd never really acknowledged that it was the amount of drugs and alcohol that I'd been consuming, considering I've been doing it since I was 20. I'm now 38. But this was 4 years ago. So 14 years of a lot.
Getting it hard.
And like I can't speak for Neil. Like, I wouldn't want to say anything, put words in his mouth or put actions in his life or anything. But I partied really hard. Mm. Like, and I was definitely known as like a hard partier. I just said, enough is enough. Why didn't you just take a break and see what happens? And so I did, and it literally changed my life.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck. And then when I started drinking and taking drugs again, it was like, oh my God, how can I go back to that life? Like, I can't. Yeah. Like, now I've seen the magic of the other side, and now I've seen how wonderful my life can be and how easy my life can be. And I always used to wonder, I was like, how can people go on nice holidays? How can people buy houses? Like, how can people afford to get married? And then I worked out that I was probably spending €1,000 on getting fucked every weekend. Yeah. Every weekend? No, that's not that much.
Every month.
Yeah. And I was like, wow. So yeah, this is how people afford stuff. You know, I'm spending a lot of cash. And then when you sit down and you work out how much that is, like over 14 years, you're like, oh my God.
It's a lot of money.
That's a house. Yeah. And every holiday I was ever going to, I was like, just go to Ibiza, go to a festival. You know, there was never, like the first holiday I took, it was a relaxing holiday, was my holiday to India with my husband. Yeah. Like every other holiday I've ever taken is Ibiza and just getting wrecked and getting on it, which is just ridiculous. And that's like insanely expensive a lot on its own.
Just going there, yeah.
Yeah. So once I'd realised how wonderful life is sober, which sounds ridiculous because I was like, I just wanted to be the biggest rebel ever.
Yeah.
Like, part of the attraction of drugs and alcohol for me was that I was badass and that I would piss off my parents. And I was like, yes. Even when I was 20, I was like, yeah, fuck you, mum and dad. Yeah. You know what I'm up to. Yeah, I'm so cool. And being one of the cool kids, like, I just wanted to be cool.
Yeah.
And like, I just hang out with all the cool kids and just do the rebellious things and stay up all night. Do all the things you weren't allowed to do as a kid, like be really naughty and stay up. Yeah, stay up. And
were your parents strict?
They were quite strict, actually. Like, I remember when I was like 15 and I said to my mum and dad, can I shave my legs? And they were like, no, you absolutely cannot, which I actually end up doing anyway. But already at 15, you know, like I wasn't shaving my legs. Like, I was quite sheltered. Like, I went to a primary school with just 30 people in a little village, like in Hertfordshire. Like, I was very sheltered. Like, and then I went to the same school that my grandfather went to, like secondary school.
Wow. Yeah.
Kilts and blazers and shirts and ties. And I was only the second year of girls, and it was very strict. No makeup, no earrings.
Yeah.
Very quite strict upbringing. And I mean, in terms of what I could have done, I was probably a very tame teenager. I'm always like, I was wild. I really wasn't. I was a bit of a loser, to be honest.
Yeah.
But when I discovered drugs and alcohol, I was like, yeah, I'm fucking badass, mate.
Rave on.
Yeah.
So why did you choose to be, was the agent thing just to be part of the industry? Because like, as you know, and I know, like, being an agent is fucking stressful. Like, personally, like, I was talking to Ryan about this because obviously he used to be an agent. I was like, dude, I think American agenting is a bit different to UK and Europe, maybe, just because it's more corporate in America and it's more like you have to do this, blah, blah, blah. But it's just, I can imagine it's probably the same in UK and Europe, but it's fucking stressful.
Yeah, do you know what? I didn't actually go into the agent world with any knowledge of what it was like at all in any way. I actually just, I was working at Spotify in the customer service. I thought that was my in to the music industry, working in customer service at Spotify. Now, the only thing it was in was a boring job that I had to deal with people's like tech issues. Like, have you tried uninstalling the app and reinstalling it? That was basically like, yeah. So I just applied for loads of intern places while I was working at Spotify. And then this guy messaged me back called Danny, and he did all the Mixmag parties, and he did like the, what do you do? Steve Bugs night, I can't remember what that was called, Poker Flat parties, various other, he's a promoter. I don't even really know what a promoter was, to be honest with you, Will. And then, so I just said, yeah, I'll come and help you. Like, I'm just keen to be... Yeah. To be part of the industry. And like, my first job was picking up Richie Horton from the airport. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I was like, I had to take Neil with me because I was like, what do I do when I get there? And he's like, well, you go up to him and say, hi, Richie, I'm here to pick you up. I was like, well, I can't do that. Oh God. I was so scared, like so scared. And I still didn't talk to him. I still made Neil go and talk to him. I was like, oh no. But I did, we did like some amazing parties. And then he said to me, I'm going to start an agency. Like, would you like to be part of it? And I was like, yes, please. But I actually had no idea what I was doing, like no idea whatsoever. The first tour I did was for Climbers. Okay. I don't know if you know them, Mexican. So, yeah, I mean, fortunately Kiko's not with us anymore, but Jay is. But they were my first tour. And like, to, I mean, talk about like going in the deep end, like these two guys had never even left Mexico, where they lived. They'd only just got passports to come on this trip. They literally had no idea what they were doing. Like, I didn't know how to get them visas. I didn't know where they were going to stay. Like, I picked them up from the airport. They ended up staying at my house for a while. Oh, like, amazing. They were like ringing me in the middle of the night, being like, oh, hi, we can't get into our hotel. I'd be like, it's fine. I'll just get out of bed and come and collect you. And then I'll go stay at my mate's house while you stay in my bed in the flat that I share with my friend. Like, I had literally no idea. Like, booking them shows for like £400 when these two guys come in from Mexico. It's like, I don't think it's going to be profitable, this tour. Like, yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah, but really good way of like learning like what not to do, basically. Yeah. Yeah. And then I went to, after a while, another agency approached me and said, do you want to come work for us? And it was not me running the entire thing. And I was like, yes, please. Because I don't know what I'm doing on my own. Like, I didn't know how to chase money. I honestly had no idea. But a good way to learn is to just like throw yourself in and hope for the best. Sink or swim. And I think I remained afloat, but I don't think I swam, but remained afloat.
Well, you're doing all right now, let's be honest.
Yeah, NG is amazing. NG is my dream, to be honest. Yeah. Like, it's amazing, and the whole pandemic has proved to me like how amazing they are as an agency. Like, the team's amazing, and I barely know them, you know, like because I'd only been there a month. I've been to the office three times. Once was for a chat with Will, who owns it, and to discuss about me working there, and twice more was to sit in the office with the guys. But they've all been there for a long time, and that just says everything about a company when you retain your staff. And everyone loves it. Everyone just loves each other. They get on. I feel like I've walked into like a really big group of friends and that I'm really like, oh, you want to be friends with me? Okay, thanks. It's really, really, really nice. And it's run like clockwork. It's efficient. Everybody's on it. Everybody's lovely and polite and nice and does their job really well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel very lucky. I'd just like to get started properly. I mean, we are obviously working now, but it's still very much like, you just don't know what's going to happen around the corner. You know, you can only do as much. But
that's the thing that worries me at this moment in time, is that it's still so, we don't know. Like, I'm waiting for things to start locking down again, if I'm honest. And I really don't want it to. But, like, I don't know.
I think the UK will be back in lockdown by the end of August. Like, I was just chatting to somebody about some shows in October, and I was like, I don't think it's going to happen. Yeah. And, like, obviously being part of the nightlife industry, I feel like we have already been a bit victimised. I feel like they don't really give a shit about us. Like, we are, you know, we're the kids, you know, we're the ones that just have fun. Like, it's not serious. Like, it's not... And I feel like we are going to get blamed for it. Like, not the Euros, you know, not Silverstone with the F1. Like, it'll be the nightclubs.
I agree with you, but I also understand why. And I don't mean to like diminish the industry that we're in, but it's so small in the grand scheme of things. And I think, so important to all of us. Like, it's hard to kind of sit back and look at the bigger picture and the importance it is to younger people or to everyone that goes, that's part of it, is so important. But in the grand scheme of life, as a financial income for the country, the world, is fucking tiny. So it's like the easiest thing to get rid of. And I know people are going to hate me for saying this, but it's just true. It's like,
I do know what you mean. I do know what you mean. It's small, and it's entertainment. You know,
exactly.
It's not a necessity. It's it's not an essential part of life, even though we can all say it is. But I think when you're in it as well, because we just live and breathe it. Yeah. You know, because it's an all consuming way of living. Like, we don't do what we do 9 to 5. Like, we do what we do 24/7, and it doesn't let up, and we work all week, and whether it's making music or getting people gigs, and then we go and we work at the weekend. And because it's all consuming for us, like, we don't get for other people that it doesn't even register on their in their life, you know. I think there's no other way to be in this industry or in any industry that's creative. You either jump in feet first and you just go for it, or you don't. Like, there's no like, I just work 9 to 5. You know, it just doesn't happen like this. And it can't.
No, you can't. You can't.
But
I think the reason why we can't is because we love it, right? And
yeah, exactly.
The thing.
It's part of us, for sure.
And like, I think 90% of the population actually fucking hate their job. And
I think so as well. Yeah. I mean, so many of my friends, the pandemic has shown them actually what their job is, because once they're out of the work environment, as an office environment, with their office mates, going out for nice lunches, they suddenly realise that their job is just this.
Yeah.
You know, like, whatever it is, whether it's like, I don't know, whatever they do. And they're like, oh, actually, I don't actually really like my job. Like, I'm just sort of doing it. Whereas I think all of us, unless we loved it, unless it lit something up inside of us, we wouldn't do what we do, because it can be stressful, and it can be, you know, whether for me being stressful, like dealing with promoters and issues, and there's like trying to get things confirmed, things change. I'm not going to say it.
You have to say it. Come on, we're fucking divas.
but then for you, you know, like the traveling, the stress on your body, like the lack of being able to like hang out with your mates, the, you know, there's literally switching around of your life to make it work with what you do. You can't not love it, because you have to miss out on pretty much every birthday celebration that goes on throughout the year.
Yeah.
Like, your mum says, oh, I think I'm going to have a nice Sunday lunch dinner on this day. And you're like, yeah, cool. And then the gig comes in. You're like, sorry, mum, I'm not going to be around.
It's funny. It's funny you said that, because leaving the UK, and I landed back in the States the day before my dad's birthday. And then it's my sister's birthday, like, 4 days after my dad's, and I FaceTimed my dad on his birthday, and like the whole family was sat at dinner, like, and you're like, fuck. And then I called my sister on her birthday, and she was like, I'm just about to eat dinner with mum and dad, I'll hit you up later. I'm like, fuck. And it's just like that, it gets you. It's like, damn. But it's just life. You just gotta roll with it.
Yeah. And what's the other option? Yeah. To go and work in for some other, in some other industry, 9 to 5, so you could be there for the dinners. Like, yeah, fuck that. Fuck that. Do you know what I mean? That's a miserable will. Yeah. No one wants a miserable will at the dinner table.
No.
So tell me, how are your first gigs? What, like describe in every minute detail how amazing they were, because I want to live my life through you.
So I've been back 2 weekends and I was supposed to have 3 shows and one of them got cancelled because of a fucking storm. But the first show back was, it was unreal. It was a Nicole Muda bar in the Mood Party in LA. So it was Nicole, Victor Calderone, Leighton Ghidani, A Vision, and myself. And we were told it was like 3,500 cap. So I was going in shit in my pants because I'm like, also I stupidly changed my rider. So to all the new equipment, and I'd not actually they, like, Pinehead sent me the equipment, but they sent it to my Detroit address, so I hadn't actually been on the new equipment at all. So I was like, shit, I don't know what I'm gonna fucking do, I don't know what I'm playing. But 30 minutes into the set, it was like, I was like, okay, I'm back. It's like riding a bike again. But it was
home.
It was about 5,000 people there. And yeah, it was fucking mental.
I bet.
But
do you get like goosebumps and tingles and just like, oh my God.
Yeah, for me it was just like, it's weird because I'm always happy when I'm playing. Well, not always happy, but 90% of the time I'm always really happy. And like, I like to look out to the crowd and just kind of watch people. And that, during that set, I did it a lot. After the first 30 minutes, it was just like, so, it made me so happy being able to look at everyone be happy and just like have that. Yeah, it was just that, like, you can play a record and you don't know what everyone's feeling, but their facial expressions, their like conversations with their friends, it's just so nice to be able to be part of that again.
Is this the set that went up on SoundCloud?
Yeah,
because you see the comments and people be like, oh man, to be there was amazing. I had a quick look through them and I was like, oh wow, these are like really, really good comments from people who were actually there and were just like saying how amazing it was. So
and Factory 93, like Carlos that puts on those parties, he's obviously like old school promoter from LA. I don't think he's from LA, he's from Montreal, but he's been in the game for years and curates amazing parties and kind of makes these amazing spaces. It was in like a huge parking lot downtown. Sound system was amazing. It was just like a very well done show, and it was just special. It was like, We had lots of offers to do lots of shows, to like is like our first show, and we just felt like this one was kind of the most perfect one to go back to, and kind of be like, we're back, people, like, let's fucking do this. But this weekend I'm playing New York, which actually by the time this comes out it will be last weekend, but I'm so excited for that. It's gonna be it's gonna be amazing. It's at Brooklyn Mirage, which Chris has just done as well.
It's gonna be loads of fun.
Yeah.
And so I actually had a question for you. I was thinking about this earlier when I was in the shower. if you had to play a 10,000 person capacity gig, or a 300 like tiny gig where it was like everyone, like sweaty basement, but like everyone was there just to see you, and so they loved you, whereas 10,000, it's like, you know, they might be there to see Nicole, they could be there to see whoever, same distance from your house, same fee, same everything, which one would you pick?
That's tough. It's tough because I like,
you gotta pick, it's life or death.
There's like two, there's two answers to it. So the 10,000 one is like, well, I can win some people over. Like, my view every time I go to a show is that like 20% of these people may know who I am, the rest don't have a fucking clue who I am, and I have to make sure that every single person leaving that club knows who I am. So like 10,000 people is a lot of people to win over and could be potentially good in the future. Mm-hmm. And it's like more of an effort. It's like that's work, if you know what I mean. I have to make sure that I'm on point. And
long game plan. Yeah. I like this. Oh, sorry.
It's all right. And then the 300 is like, it's the fucking best.
Yeah.
It's homies. Like, but I'm probably going to say the 10,000 because we can play a party for 300 people whenever we want.
Everyone comes out for me whenever I want.
It's not that sounded wanky as fuck, didn't it?
Yeah. I think, do you know what? No one's going to be booking me for a 10,000 capacity venue anytime soon. But if it was me, I'd definitely go for that one.
Yeah.
I would be standing on top of the deck, be like,
would you be like an EDM DJ?
Oh, totally, yeah. Totally. Like 100%. I'll just be all over it. I'll be like playing banger after banger, like killer, no, like thriller. No filler, killer, like every no single fuck. Yeah. I'll just be like, yes, go for it. Everyone would be exhausted by the time I'd finish. But 300 people, I'd be like, oh, whatever.
Yeah,
I'd want the fame and the glory of the 10,000.
We love the sweaty basements. The thing with like certain festivals though, when it's that big, people are just there. Then a lot of them are just there because like, one of their mates wants to go and they're all like, yeah, this is a fucking great idea and not necessarily into it, which is why I'm like, let's fucking make them into it. Which I kind of struggle sometimes when DJs don't actually DJ. They just play boring sets in like festivals. I'm like, guys, come on. Like, you're actually being paid to entertain. Like,
yeah, showcase your shit. Don't just like rest on your laurels. Like, bring it.
Yeah.
Especially when you've got that many people to entertain.
Yeah.
You might be able to get away with it when it's smaller, like a 300 sweaty basement. You might be able to keep people in there because they're there just for that. You've got a captive audience. Whereas you've got 10,000 people at a festival, they can leave anytime they want and go see someone else.
Exactly.
You know, you've got stiff competition like on your doorstep.
Yeah. The minute somebody else comes on another stage and they see the timetable, they're heading out of there. So it's definitely an ego thing for me. It's like, I want to make sure that everyone's saying that Will Clark played the best set of the night. Like,
yeah,
that's all I give a fuck about. I don't care what anyone says. It's just, that's what I want to do. So yeah, it's interesting. Who are you looking after now?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, it all went a bit weird then.
Do you know what? I knew you were going to ask me this. I was actually like, oh no, it's my connection. Fucking internet in Berlin. Hello.
I can hear you now. You're back.
Okay, who am I looking after now? A Mean Legend Dance.
You can't forget anyone, so the pressure is on.
Oh, I'm going to have to get out my signature because I'm actually going to forget it. And then I'll just be in so much trouble. Oh, God, I'm actually going to read it out to make sure. Okay, A Mean Legend Dance, Cats and Dogs, Eli, or is it Ellie and Fert? Not quite sure.
Eli and
Do you
Fert.
Know whether it's Ellie or Eli?
Eli.
It is Eli, okay. Yeah. Me and Neil have this conversation all the time and I say Eli and he's like, no, it's a girl, it's Ellie. And I'm like, yeah, but...
I think it's Eli. She's dope. They're both dope. I love those two.
Yeah. I've worked with them now since I joined NGE. It's going really well. Good. So GW Harrison, who's like UK superstar right now, James Organ, Jonas Rathman, Juliet Fox, Kevin Knapp, Pillow Talk, Prock and Fitch, Sawley, and you.
How long have you been looking after Juliet for?
Like a month.
Sick. Yeah. I had her on the podcast and she was talking about changing agents. So I'm happy.
It's me. So I've known Juliet a while, actually, and because she lives in Berlin as well. And I don't know, you know, she's going out with Seb, who used to be at Drum Code.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've living here and yeah, she's hit me up and I was like, yeah, I'd love to add a talented woman to my roster.
She's wicked.
Because we have a serious lack of women on the roster and it's frustrating. And it's not because there's a lack of talent out there. It's probably because I'm not looking hard enough. But you know, you don't want to add women just for the sake of adding women because that just seems wrong. But yeah, Juliet, she's wicked. And I do feel like you and her have quite a lot of synergy in terms of like the music that you play, the sets that you play and stuff. So
yeah, I want to get her on some shows over here. I put her on the list to get on. She's wicked. And I've known her for years.
Yeah.
I've known her since I was like 18.
Oh, and how old are you now? I should know this. I just don't.
31.
Ages.
Yeah.
Ages.
Who's the biggest diva? Come on. Who's the biggest diva?
Oh, you, obviously.
Obviously. Probably is.
Do you know what?
Armin Edge and Dance. It's got to be those boys.
I knew you were going to say this because everyone thinks it is. And when I first started working with them, which was like maybe 5 years ago now, I was like, oh, God. Because my boss, my old boss, Darren from Family, he actually was like, oh, I've got a new artist I'd like you to work with. And I was thinking, oh, bloody hell. Like, I've heard all about these guys. Like, they're such divas. The exact opposite.
They're amazing. I love them.
They are, like, absolute, like, love hearts. I love them. Like, I met with Amin when I was back in Lisbon. And back in Lisbon. I've only been to Lisbon once.
Back home.
When I was back in my hometown of Lisbon. That's not true. But, yeah. And, like, he's so lovely. Like, I love them. And do you know what? I made a rule after working with one particular DJ, which I won't say DJ Hell.
What? Did you not like him?
If you can't say anything nice about somebody, don't say anything at all.
True, I agree with that.
He made my assistants cry, not just one, but two.
Oh, no, that's not good.
And you know what? Like, everybody's got their way. Me and him just didn't mesh very well together. Yeah. And I just said after that, like, you know what? I'm just not going to work with anybody else I don't get on with or don't have a nice relationship with. Like, it's just not worth it. Like, as we were saying before, like, we live and breathe our jobs. Yep. It's such a big part of my life. And like how my day's gone at work will determine how my evening goes at home, determine how my weekend is. Like, if I've had a shit day at work, like, Neil knows as soon as he walks through the door, he's like, oh God, what's happened? So to have people that are divas or hard work, and I'm not saying that I don't sometimes think with my DJs, you know, I do. And I'm sure we feel like that about me.
Oh, 100%. We all feel the same about each other. 100%.
Yeah, but this is fine. Yeah. But like, do I work with people that I actually don't like? Like, no.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that anybody who puts up with toxic people in their life, whatever that might, and they might not be toxic to everybody, but if it's toxic to you, like, you know, across the board, whether it's family, friends, work, whatever, anybody who puts up with that is just doing themselves a massive injustice. And it's just causing themselves more mental and psychological and spiritual pain than is necessary. The world's already quite hard.
Yeah.
Why put yourself in a situation where you've got to spend time? And I find as well, when I like someone, I work twice as hard for them.
Yeah.
I will go that extra mile. Like, when I've got to know my DJs, I get to know like their girlfriends. Like, I care deeply about them. So for me to not like someone or think they're a dick, I then just think,
it's just a bit weird, isn't it?
I'm not going to answer my phone to you at the weekend.
Yeah.
I don't care. Yeah. Like, you're not my problem. And even though it is my problem, but you shouldn't feel like that. You know, you should always want to go the extra mile.
Does it work? No, how does it work being an agent with like NGE? Like, if you were to find somebody, can you just take anybody on, or does it have to go through the whole company? And is there multiple people that have to agree?
No, not at all. Like, if I really like somebody and I can take it to Will and say, what do you think? Like, I'd never just take someone on to say, oh, by the way, guys, this is what I'll take it on. Like, I'd always want to get other people's opinion. Yeah, and I'd just be like, what do you think? And if they say, I don't think it's a good idea, I'd obviously want to know why they don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But quite often, and especially Will, like Will gives us so much freedom to do what we want. He's like the least micromanaging. He's not even, I wouldn't even call him a manager. He owns the company, yeah. You know, and he just lets us do what we're happy to do. Mm. And I guess for that, him as well, that means, you know, nothing hangs on his head. Like, you know, if I took somebody on and they were a dick, he wouldn't be like, I could be like, well, Will, you said it was a good idea, yeah. You know, or like, you know, I've already got myself to blame. So yeah, I mean, it would be totally up to me if I took somebody on.
That's wicked.
Which is really nice. I'm not forced into anything. And I've definitely had artists forced on me in the past. Ones that I either didn't believe in as artists, yeah. Or ones that I didn't like. And it's very hard, very hard. Or even ones that you don't particularly like their music.
I've had that with an agent before, where my agent at the time got fired from the company. And then I got forced upon somebody else as an agent. It just never works for anyone. Because there's like... At the end of the day, for me, this the one thing I've learned over the years, and I didn't get it good. I've only had it good for the last like couple of years, is like having the right people and the right team around you. And it takes time to kind of get used to that. But for me, it's like having the right manager, the right agents, the right press people, the right label managers, just everyone around you, the right videographers, the photo team, like everyone that's like... perfect for you, it makes so much of a difference.
Such a difference. You just can't work with people you don't like.
No.
And it's like, especially like work directly, like it's different, you know. For example, if there was someone at NGE that I didn't like, you know, like a colleague, for example, that's different, you know. But like doing what we do, whereas like, you know, we're a team. Like to have somebody in your team that you don't respect, or you all has like totally different views on life,
totally.
Not different views on life, because we all got different views, but you know, like perhaps different moral views or whatever, you know, you just think like, I can't get on board with who you are. Like, you need to be on board with who you are.
What's going on with this fitness stuff as well? How did that all start?
Because of lockdown, because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
I actually said to my husband about 3-4 years ago, like, because when I go out drinking and taking drugs, I got massively into fitness. Like that was a thing. I was like, well, I've got nothing else to do because this is all I've done with my life, but I don't have any other hobbies.
Yeah.
So I got really, really into fitness. And I said to Neil, like, oh, I'd like to become a personal trainer. He laughed at me really hard. And like, oh, I'm stupid. I was like, thanks for the support on that one, Neil. But then when the lockdown came, I'm a bit of I like to be busy. I like to work. Like, I don't like just, I mean, I like watching Netflix as much as anybody else, but I do like to have a goal and have a target. So I just thought, well, I'm just going to do my personal training qualification. So I did it. And I just thought it'd be good to take up a bit of time and maybe have a bit of a side hustle as and when things start up.
Yeah.
It's turned into a bit of a main hustle. Not necessarily now, actually. I've sacked off a few clients recently because as agent world gets busier, I obviously wanted to calm down on the PT stuff. Yeah. But it's been loads of fun. I spent the whole of last summer outdoors, like in the parks, all the different parks in Berlin, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Like I only really train women, and as with everything else in my life, I don't work with dickheads. So there's been some people that I've trained for a little bit and then gone, sorry, I haven't really got any more time to book you in for another session, and then just not work with them. And obviously keeping fit in the process, like it opened up a whole world of learning for me. There's loads of learning to do with it. Like, I mean, it's not rocket science, but it is biology. You know, you do have to learn about the muscles and the bones and how we work and the different energy systems and stuff. But it sort of lit up a spark inside of me about learning and about how, I think also my brain had recovered from the years of drug abuse, and like it was no longer mush and it was able to retain information. So it all came about exactly the same time. I was like, oh, I can remember things.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes. My brain is working. From there, I've gone on to do like other things from that, and like still personal training people, but not as many as I was. Personal training my friends, which is great because I mean, I hang around and get to tell my friends what to do. I'm like,
control freak.
I get paid for it. I'm like, go on. But it's been good. It's definitely not something I'm going to do forever. You know, like I do go into each personal training session the same way I go into the gym, a bit like,
oh, fuck's sake, yeah. Yeah.
And then I do it and I'm happy that I've done it. And I do still go it. Yeah, I do. Like when I'm like, it's proper work, you know, it's really hard graft. I was so used to just sitting at my desk, like tapping away at my laptop, like even if it was a 12-hour day, I wasn't really moving. And like, obviously that's not great for us, but it wasn't, and it never felt like agent work was like exhausting, even though it is in so many ways. Whereas personal training, like I get home after like hefting around like 10 kilos on my back all day, doing 20,000 steps, working out with people, giving motivation, and I am fucking exhausted. So it's hard graft, but in terms of like brain power, it's not really hard graft, you know. Like I tell people how many squats to do and stuff, and like, I'm not taking away from any personal trainers, and there are millions of personal trainers that are way better than me because they probably invest a little bit more in their training, maybe in like in terms of like going a little bit further on, you know, like doing the extra courses and stuff. But it isn't perhaps for me the most taxing brain wise of things to do. So it's probably not going to be something that I do forever. Though I am so happy to add it to like my what's the word, I can't remember, repertoire of things that I can do, because before it was like just agent, and now I'm like agent, personal trainer, and I run online courses, which is great. So
so are you doing online PT as well?
So I do online PT. Sick. But I also run my zero experiments.
Okay, what's so, this? I've seen bits of this on, but I don't fully know what it is. Yeah. Talk to me about this.
After all of my experience of what I went through with my drug and alcohol problems, addictions, whatever you want to call them, like doesn't need a label. And I sort of fumbled my way through the like getting past the cravings, the urges, getting to the other side where the magic felt amazing, and then sort of slipping back into that world and then coming back out again. And I just learned so many tips and tricks and ways of finding that better balance that I decided last December that I would see if anybody else had those issues and was finding that their drug and alcohol consumption was perhaps tipping in the wrong balance. And obviously you don't have this issue, Will, because you've been sober forever, haven't you?
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask you to come on the course, but then I just thought, you know what? I just don't think you're going to resonate with the people that are on the course, because the people that are on the course are like, yes, they're ravers. Yes, they're music industry people. But the people who have got problems with drugs and alcohol, whereas that's never been you. So though you've got perspective on it,
never been an issue. But I guess like growing up with my parents having rehabs and like always being,
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. So my parents own drug and alcohol rehabs.
I mean, this is amazing. How did I not know? What?
Yeah, that's so I like ever since some of my youngest memories were like going to mum's work at one of the rehabs, or mum used to run like the mental health in Somerset. So like, I think like,
do you think that put you off?
I don't think it put me off, but I think subconsciously it was like, I'm kind of like a bit of a strange where if I do something, I make sure I fucking do it.
Right. Okay. Which can be dangerous when it comes to drugs and alcohol.
Yeah. I think because my mum's been sober for nearly 36 years.
Wow, well done.
My dad drinks, my brother and sister drink. It's like not, and I used to drink, but I just don't like it. And I was just like, fucking gay, I'm just going
to
stop.
To be honest, it doesn't taste nice.
No, exactly.
But I mean, I do like the odd non-alcoholic beer but it's more like the ritual of having it than the taste. Because when you actually think about it, I'm like, it doesn't taste good. And I've never liked cocktails, like, because like, they're just so sugary and just... And they're the only way that you can make alcohol taste nice, you know, it's for a cocktail. And I'm like, well, I don't like paying €13 for a cocktail either. I'm like, sorry, no.
I butted in talking about your zero.
All good. I do have some questions to actually ask you about sobriety and stuff, but cool. We can get around to this. So the zero experiments, we started with the 6-0 in January for Dry Jan, obviously. Mm. And there was 45 of us, all from within the industry, whether that meant that they were working in the industry or raving in the industry. Yeah. Like it was two sides. We had So over 60 days. And I guess the aim of it is to not drink and take drugs for 60 days.
Yeah.
So it's not like the whole thing about the course. If you were actually didn't stop doing it, but did all the other work that was part of the course, which wouldn't happen, because I think what we learn about in the course is like the science behind drugs and alcohol, like what they actually do to your body and your brain. We had like addiction specialists come in and chat to us. We did workouts led by me, yoga, meditation. We did like there's worksheets every week that we look into like a personal development. We had interviews with DJs that were either sober or sober curious, or they've done like some sober stints in the past. And it was amazing. It was so good. And then we did another one in May, and that was a smaller group with a small amount of time as well. And then we've got another, I can't say we as if I've got this like big corporate company. It's just me on my own. So then I've got another one that starts in October for Sober October. But this one, I'm going to not just focus in on drugs and alcohol, focusing on like bad habits.
Yeah.
So things that we do impulsively, such as picking up our phone for social media, biting your nails, shopping, gambling, falling in love with the wrong person over and over again, overeating, undereating, food restrictions, like over-exercising, anything really that's an impulsive habit that you do that negatively impacts your life. Like, it doesn't have to be addiction, you know? And like, I always like, am I a drug addict? Am I an alcoholic? And it's a question that I've pondered so much, because when you look at the actual definition of it, you would say yes. Because do you do something regularly that negatively impacts your life and you still continue doing it all the time? Like, yes, okay, I got fired from every single job I had when I was in advertising because of what I did at the weekend. So by that definition, yes. But then would you look at me and say I was an addict? Like, I'm not what I would look at as an addict, you know? So, and I think in a way we're all probably addicted to something, you know, whether it's like your morning ritual of doing your coffee, it's just how damaging it is to your life, or whether it's damaging at all to your life.
Yeah.
And we all have our habits, good and bad. So this is just, just giving us a little bit more knowledge about why we do the things, like how we can change the circuits in our brain, how we can like change the reward systems, and hopefully at the end of the 60 days or the 30 days, just come out of it being a bit more self-aware.
I was going to say, that's what it feels like. It feels about, it's like almost like more education, where it's like kind of learning, it's taking a seat back and sit back and looking at yourself, really.
It's totally, and that's how to change your habits, is totally 100%. Observing. And it's like, was it non-judgmental, compassionate curiosity?
Yeah.
And it's literally just being like, I'm not going to blame myself for this anymore. I'm not going to be like, you know, if you had a drink and you're trying not to, rather than be like, why the fuck have I done this? Be like, why have I done this?
Yeah.
Like, what made me go out to do this? No, rather be angry with myself. Be like, what is it in my life that is making me do something that I know is so unaligned with what I actually want to do with my life?
Yeah.
You know? And that could be with so many things, you know, if someone, I don't know, kept cheating on their partners. Like, why do they feel compulsively need to do that? Like, if someone kept spending money they don't have, and they know they've got debt and they can't help but go shopping, like, why do they feel they need to keep on going shopping? And what can they do to break that circuit in their head that to say, okay, so how about I just think about, observe the fact that I'm feeling like this? Like, is the world going to change if I don't go shopping? Like, is my life going to be bad? Because really we're stressing about something like, I can't cope. But of course you can.
Yeah.
Like, you can cope. Yeah. You just have to be uncomfortable. You have to sit with it. And I guess my biggest addiction has been smoking.
Yeah.
And there's times when I am literally like, well, not anymore, but like, oh my God, just need a cigarette. I'm like, it's okay. It's going to go. Like, everything passes, like everything. And I always say to myself, all right, if you still want a cigarette in 10 minutes, go and have a cigarette.
How many times did you want a cigarette in 10 minutes?
Never. Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten that I ever wanted one, because I got distracted with something else.
Mm.
And so that's a zero experiment.
That's amazing. I didn't know it was all about that. Like, I saw things online.
Yeah.
I saw Sam. Was Sam doing it? Sam Devine?
Sam Devine, she was appeared on it. Like, we had Chris Lake. Kate, like, we interviewed him for the last one. Jess Bays, Andy Rayside, he's the agent at Defected. Fat Tony, who's obviously, I don't know if you know Fat Tony, but he's a He had definite addiction problems. Like, he pulled his own teeth out when he was on. He had this thing when he's. I think he's done loads of ketamine, and he put things in meth mouth where you feel like. He said he thought he had woodland creatures growing in his mouth. So he got a stick and a pair of pliers, pulled his own teeth out. Like, that's wow. But then you look at where he is now, and he's only where he is now because he gave up all the drugs.
He's fucking hilarious on Instagram.
Oh my God, so funny! Like, interviewing him was hilarious, amazing, but I was so nervous. I was like, it's Fat Tony, he's so funny. I was like, don't try and be funny because you can't compare.
Is he funny in person? Is he a funny guy?
Totally bonkers. Like, absolutely bonkers, of course.
Love that.
It was nice to have all the different celebrities
a community as well, isn't it? And I think that's what a lot of people lack in when it comes to addiction or any problems, is that it's kind of, you feel like you're on your own, and being able to have something like that where people can one of my good mates, he's like quite a successful chef in America, and they set up a kind of a foundation which is like AA and NA but for chefs, because chefs don't have time. Like, they literally don't, they're working 7 days a week. So they don't have time to go to NA and AA and things like that. So they kind of set up a foundation for themselves. And I was like, we need more of that. Need more people talking about it and talking about the issues.
Yeah. The best thing about the Zero Experiments is we have like a Slack channel. Mm. Everyone joins Slack. And everyone chats. You give it, you offer support to other people, and you realize you're not alone in it, and because it's such an isolating thing. And even though drinking, taking drugs in the beginning is incredibly social, you know, like everyone goes to the pub, like you buy drugs, you do them with your friends. When it becomes a problem, it's extremely isolating. You feel like you can't talk to anyone, you don't want to admit it's the problem, you internalize everything. It can make problems like depression, anxiety, paranoia so much worse. So then when it comes to like asking for help, you're scared, you know, and it, just thinking about it and admitting you've got a problem can be anxiety inducing. So when it comes to like having a group of people that get it, and especially because everyone was kind of from the same, like we were talking about what we're doing, green rooms and like going to Ibiza, you know, like things that everybody got, everyone understood. And then we'd talk like how to go to a rave sober, you know, whereas when I started getting sober, all the groups that I was joining, they were full of 50-year-old housewives who were stashing wine bottles under the sink. And that is problematic, of course. I didn't resonate with them at all. And as soon as I would mention that, oh, yeah, and it's drugs, judgments, because, you know, alcohol's fine. That's not a problem because it's legal. Drugs, on the other hand,
so weird, you know,
so weird. And then when I'd go to like, oh, well, I'll go to an NA meeting or an AA meeting, and I'll sit there and think, well, I'm a fucking fraud. Like, these people's lives have been turned upside down by this, you know?
No, I get
these
that,
people
have
been rock bottom, like rock bottom. And I'm like, I didn't get to rock bottom. Like, I caught myself before I got there.
Which is fucking good.
And you know what? And that is what the course is about.
Yeah.
It's about catching people before they get that low, before they lose their jobs and, you know, their marriage falls apart, whatever.
Amazing. So is it anyone can kind of get involved with that? How does it work?
Yeah, anyone can get involved. The best way to get involved is go to my Instagram. I am Joanna Barber, and sign up to my newsletter. And I will send you more info as and when it's launched. It's going to launch at the beginning of September. We start on the 29th of September. I'm also going to do a free workshop before then. I don't know why I keep signing myself up for all this work, Will, honestly. Like,
yeah, you got to fucking get me gigs. Stop doing all of this shit.
I will. Do you know what, actually? Like, I went on holiday to Lisbon thinking that was going to, like, that was going to be the best break. And I got back and I had so much work. And I was like, I have to take another week off work now because I'm actually burnt out.
Yeah.
Because I've just taken on so much. But this one, all the other courses that I've done, I've, like, the one in December, January, I like launched on like the 20th of December and it went live on the 4th of Jan. Mm. And luckily, I couldn't go on holiday because I didn't get my COVID test back in time. So I actually had 6 days on my own at home over Christmas. So I wrote the entire course then. The last one was a bit of a rush as well. This time I've given myself a lot of time. So it's already like half written.
That's awesome.
It's like, yes, it's going to be fine this time, rather than me being like, oh, up till late at night and then waking up early.
It's been really interesting during COVID as well to see people in the industry do different things.
Yeah.
And like actually like put their work and effort into other things rather than like still music focus and still like kind of relating to the industry. But I think you wouldn't have ever have had the time to be able to do any of that.
Never in a million years. Oh, look, my little...
Yeah, I just saw him.
Yeah, and do you know what? Like, if I hadn't done these, I wouldn't be able to be an agent. Like, I was really scared about telling any of my artists that I trained to be a personal trainer. Because I thought they were going to say to me, oh, well, I don't want to work with you because you've got other priorities. But if I didn't do this, I would have had to go and got another job at somewhere. You know, I'd have had to look for another job maybe within the music industry still, but I would have had to stop being an agent because there's no way you can just sit around for 16 months without anything coming in for your sanity, not just financially, regardless of how much money you've got in the bank. You can't just sit and wait.
That's the thing that got to me the most was it wasn't needing the money. It was the kind of the value in life, like the purpose in life. It's like
without a purpose, it's so difficult to feel.
And
I
think for me, like like earning money gives me a purpose, and it's not because I need the money, it's not because I want the money, it's not because I want to buy nice things. I don't fucking buy nice things, really. It's not my thing. But it's that purpose, like, okay, you're working this weekend and you're earning money. It's so important to me.
Yeah. Having a purpose, it's one of the things we actually talk about in the course.
Yeah.
Like, what is your purpose in life? Like, what's your purpose for the day?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what do you really want? And like, you know, set your goals and go and get it. And when you've got a pandemic, and even if you set some goals, which are like, this is when Boris said that he wasn't going to open all the UK clubs. Like, we all had that as our target and that as our goal. Yeah. And then someone takes it away. And if you don't know if you could ever make that goal come true, like, you kind of lose your own autonomy over your life.
Totally.
And then suddenly it's really hard. And you're like, well, nothing's certain. It doesn't matter how hard I work. If you're not working towards anything, you don't have that goal and that purpose, then you're just sort of floating. And and you don't feel like you're going to achieve anything. You know, you don't achieve. So I actually have this is kind of related to what we're just talking about. What would be your ideal lineup, like I'm saying, like setting goals and targets, but if you had to feature on a lineup with four other DJs, who would they be?
That's tough. I just want my homies there.
Like, this is cute. And who would they be? Tell us.
It's tough again. Like, not musical. Like, it doesn't need to be musical. Like, that the music doesn't have to flow at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is up to you. It's your lineup. Your stage.
I would get A Vision on. He's like, I really fucking love what he does at the moment. And he's a super nice dude. So A Vision would be one of them. Maceo, just because I love what he does. He's fucking, and I've never met him and I want to work with him. And yeah, he just seems dope. I'd bring one of my mates on called Born Dirty. He's doing like a side project that nobody knows about, and I'd get his side project on because he's like one of my best mates and it's fucking amazing music. I'd get Parrot, Made in Paris, who's a friend from Australia. She's great, and I love what she's doing. Oh, that's such... There's so many.
I mean, that
people.
Is four. Yeah, I mean, you can create the whole festival if you want.
I'd love to have like Faithless together as with Maxi Jazz.
Yes.
Like, because obviously he's left, but they would be on there.
I think that would sell quite a few tickets as well. So it's probably quite a good tactical one.
Yeah, Chemical Brothers. They're just the ones. They would 100%.
Both of those I've seen, Faithless and Chemical Brothers, at the festival in Chelmsford, I think, of all festivals. It's like the first festival I went to. But the festival. It was very heavy.
I'd love London Grammar on there. They're my favourite band ever.
I hope we're taking notes, because when we do put on the Will Clark Festival...
I've got the lineup for the festival in my head. Don't worry, we got this.
Can I DJ in the backstage bit?
Your main stage, your EDM. You're going to be an EDM DJ by then.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could do. If I can be like a David Guetta and get someone else to do the mixing for me, I'll just unplug all the decks and just put a mix on.
Poor David Guetta gets so much shit.
Me and Neil have had so many conversations. Like, if someone said to you, you have to sell out, but you're going to be worth millions, or you get to, like, you know, do the long game and, like, stick to your guns in terms of, like, your music choice or whatever, and it's not, you don't know whether it's going to work or not, or you can just sell out and just, like, yeah, you know, hit the big time, what would you do? And we're both like, probably sell out.
Yeah, 100%. I didn't give a fuck. I mean,
this is me, but I'm not an artiste.
No, so. I would sell out. Like, if somebody is like, Will, would you want your records to be number one in the charts? 100%. Yeah, is a Will Clark record, as Will Clark records are now, going to be a number one? Fuck no. But... like, would I want a career like Tiesto? 100%. I want a career like Carl Cox? 100%. But Carl's done it so amazingly because he hasn't sold out. But, like, would I want to release music like David Guetta? Fuck no. Mm. So it's that catch-22, isn't it? It's like, yes, yeah, I'd love the success, but would I want...
You'd have to sell your soul a little bit. But then when you went home at night to your £5 million mansion, you know.
And I don't think I'd have a mansion. That's the thing.
You probably wouldn't, would you? You'd probably have something really humble and, like, cute.
I'd have zero neighbors. I'd have no, in the middle of the countryside. I'd have a bunch of cows and I'd have, like, a little farmhouse.
Let's all go and live on Will's farm. Yeah,
that's the goal. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't like the word sellout.
No. I mean, you can't say with a sellout, you know. You say, and I think as well, there's like when people become a commercial hit, suddenly they've sold out.
Yeah.
But it's not their fault that everybody likes their music. In fact, wouldn't you prefer, like, I say one of the biggest issues with DJs, musicians, artists, whatever, is obscurity. You know, you could be the best in the whole world. You could be the most amazing DJ, the most amazing music producer, but if no one hears what you do,
totally agree,
then you're not really fulfilling your dream, unless your dream is just to be the bedroom DJ.
Yeah.
Like, is everybody loving what you do? Is that selling out, or is that actually what you're going out there to achieve?
Exactly.
And does it suddenly make it a sellout and pop because so many people like it? Well, if it does, fuck that. Like, like, you're allowed to be popular.
Yeah.
Like, you're totally allowed. But in our world, popular isn't cool, you know?
Yeah, fuck them. Anyone that says that, they it's weird because we have this. It's such a clicky industry. Like, classic example, like, I'm happily be honest about this. Like, I'm doing a show. I won't say the club, but we're doing quite a big show in America. And we're struggling to... get artists to play with me because they, like, still think that I'm this dirty bird act and still doing all of that. And it's like, why the fuck do you care? We're going to be playing, like, one of the best clubs in America. Like, let's take our egos out of this and let's just fucking have a great fucking party.
But then again,
I say that and then I get asked to play somewhere where it doesn't make sense for me, and it doesn't make sense for me as an artist. So I also get both sides of the story. But it's like, it goes back to what we were saying at the DJ, like, when DJing is like, play like it's your fucking last set. Like, play like no one knows who you are, because there's so many massive DJs that have extremely successful careers, but they just don't play. Like, no one really is going to see them play music because they love the music. They're going just to say that they've been to see that person.
Yeah. It's a thing to say you've done, and
You put it on your Instagram, or you've got a picture with that person, or you, like, so I don't know. That's just how I look at it. And obviously everyone's allowed their opinions, but I think it's just like, I had a meeting with somebody the other day and we were kind of like all talking about stuff. And I was like, guys, it's fucking house and techno. It's not the fucking, we're not the G7 summit. Let's just fucking put a party on and let's just like have fun. Like that's
so true. Like, stop taking yourself so fucking seriously. Exactly. This is supposed to be entertainment. Yeah. It's discos.
Yeah.
Like, let's have some fun with it. Like, yes, I know, like, you can't just be like, it's not, you know, take nothing seriously, but also like, it's supposed to be a laugh. Mm, like,
yeah.
It's supposed to be, and the reason we do it is because we enjoy it, yeah. Not because we have to do anything.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the industry has like, over, well, it's always been like it, but it's like a lot of it is like ego based, whether that's the artist, whether that's the manager, whether that's the agent, or whether that's the promoter. It's a lot of it is kind of just feeding into each other's egos. And I'm like, at the end of the day, what are we putting parties on? Who are we putting parties on for? We're putting parties on so people can escape reality. That's all we do it for. That's what clubbing's about, is escaping that shit 9-to-5 job that majority of the population do. And let's kind of bring it back to that. And I was hoping COVID would have like cleared that up, but it hasn't.
No, unfortunately not. There's still definitely a popularity contest for sure.
Yeah, which I get, because a popularity contest means the more popular you are, the more money you earn. And at the end of the day, I want everyone to earn as much money as they possibly can so that it gives them the lives they want. Not that money does, but money makes life easier for everyone.
For sure. I mean, obviously, I was going to say, obviously having loads of money can be problematic. I can't really see how it could be problematic right now. But
I think that's the thing I think if you're doing something you absolutely love, the money's just a bonus, right? And it's not about, don't get me wrong, I would love to be a fucking multimillionaire. But the reason why I'd like to be a multimillionaire is not so I can have nice things. It's so I can make sure that my family and friends and my team around me are sorted. And like, for the first time, like since working with Ryan, my manager, it's the first time I wanted to make my manager money. And I wanted to like make my agents money and my team money. And it's like, that excites me more than anything, is to be able to have a team that is all living an amazing life through my career.
Like,
that's what excites me.
I like this, obviously. But you know, it's the same for me. Like, you know, I feel there's a great sense of satisfaction with watching my DJs treat themselves and their family, whichever way makes them happy, you know, whether it's kitting out their studio, whether it's buying a nice watch, whether it's buying a house. You know, obviously there is a satisfaction with watching them on an amazing stage. And, you know, there's some gigs out there which are amazing and they're shit payers, and they are satisfying as well. Yeah. But watching people grow and watching people have what they want in life and what they truly deserve is so satisfying. It really is.
Yeah, because you've worked with GW for a while.
He's like the prime example. Like, when I started booking him, he was like 250 quid and my booking fee was like £37.50. And it was like, it was a passion project for sure. But now he's just doing amazingly and his fees are wonderful for all of us. And, you know, like, just counting up how much he's going to make in a month, and I'm like, gee, this is amazing. But he's, you know, I've worked with him for 5 years, maybe longer actually. When did we start with 5 years actually. And, you know, it's loyalty, it's trust. Like, he believes in me. Like, when I moved to NG, he was the first one I told, and I was like, you have to come with me, George. I was like, if you don't want to come, then it probably will change my decision. He was like, no, I'm in, obviously, like, whatever. And there was no, like, you know, he didn't even hesitate with like, oh, should I? And I'm not saying, you know, people can hesitate for sure, but it's just like, we have a really nice, good-knit team, but we have been working together for such a long time. And it's nice to watch him grow and do so well. Like, it's a total pleasure, in fact. And like, I love his girlfriend and they're about to get a dog and I'm so excited for them.
Yeah, he's amazing. I knew him before he was a DJ.
Because he's an amazing graphic designer as well. And he's doing stuff we are comfortable.
That's what I knew him as in Ibiza. In fact, no, he was a PR dude in Ibiza, handing out flyers for Pucker Up. And it's so nice to see him doing what he's doing now. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be working with you, working with him. Because it's like a full circle. It's great.
Yeah. I remember actually, I'd just taken him on and I was at Studio 338 and I was on in, this is a drug story, by the way. It's quite a funny one. Well, funny / embarrassing. And I had got there and I was like really, really hungover. And I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll just do a big bump of ketamine. That would be great. That would really sort me out. And it 100% did not. And I was sitting on a bit on a bench in the back, like on my own. And I had a book on my lap because I was representing Cynthia at the time. And I bought her a book as a Christmas present. And I was going to egg afterwards. And I couldn't speak. I couldn't see anything. And George kept coming up to me like, oh my God, you're going to be my agent. And I was just like, oh God, this is so awful. And I couldn't, I probably was even dribbling. And he was, bless him, he was like an excited little puppy. And I was just like, just please fuck off. Like, please. So awful. And he was like, oh yeah. And when I interviewed him for the 6-0 experiment, he was like, oh shit, yeah, I remember this. I was like, George, I was so embarrassed, like so embarrassed. But still, that didn't stop me for a long time. No. Still crying on. No.
That's
no.
Amazing.
Will, I have some beard questions for you.
Okay, hit me with them.
All right. How long have you been growing your beard?
I've had it for 7 years.
7 years. I would like to see a picture of you without the beard. I need to see it. I probably can Google, but I've never
I'll find tried. One and I'll send it to you. It's pretty bad. Yeah. I look like a 15-year-old gay porn star. It's pretty
cool.
Fucking
I mean,
awful.
This sounds great. Can you shave it all off and we go to Berghain together and you can dress in a harness? And like,
I would just literally get destroyed. No, I think they'd prefer the beard, to be fair.
Like, actually, they probably would, but yeah. You would actually get destroyed in there.
Yeah.
Like, you would actually. I would lose you immediately and you'd come back and be like, well, that was new.
That was an interesting experience.
Yeah. And do you oil the beard?
Yes, I oiled it this morning after my workout. After
and
I
what brand of oil do you use?
I use, today was Apothecary 87.
Oh, nice. I've never heard of this.
Yeah, and sometimes I use Lalabo oil, but that's about it.
And you trim it, or do you get someone to trim it for you?
I get somebody to trim it, but it's really hard to get a good barbers in America. They're pretty much all shit, apart from like the black barbers or the like Hispanic barbers. So I usually just grow it out, so it looks really shit for a long time until I get back to the UK. But yeah.
And will you ever
no
shave it off?
No. Well, I don't.
What prompted you to get it in the beginning? Just because you didn't want to look
I actually, so my parents own a charity. They own a charity for mental health. And yeah. I was doing it to raise money. And then during that year, I was like, a year and I'll shave it off after a year. And during that year, my career kind of took off and all my press shots were with beards. And I was like, this is kind of my thing.
Yeah. Your identity now, yeah. It's part of you. Yeah.
So I just stuck with it.
I definitely think, like, if I said, oh, I represent Will Clark, they were like, who is he? And I was like, oh, the guy with the beard, they'll be like, oh yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah.
And that's quite a nice thing to do, to be like, even if they don't know you by sound or by sight, they know that you've got the beard.
Yeah, it sounds crazy, but it's one of the reasons why I think my career is why people
the lucky beard.
It's not even it's that kind of recognition. Like there's somebody. Okay. I think it's like somebody's seen a picture of it, and you don't forget it, if you know what I mean. And I don't I don't mean that in an egotistical way. It's just I don't know. I can't compare myself to people wearing masks, but it's the same sort of thing. It's like
yeah it's your thing. Yeah. I actually, when I went to ADE one year, when I bleached blonde hair, I dyed my hair pink.
Yeah,
and just so everybody would be like, oh, the girl with the pink hair, the girl with the pink hair. So they, and I always like, if I bumped into somebody in the street and you know, and they were with somebody else, and then I took their details and I would message them and be like, oh, hi, yeah, I had pink hair. So they'd always know who I was, you know, and it for sure it worked.
And so, it's interesting because like I'll go out with, like, let's say, for instance, we're doing like a big festival and I'm with like all my mates there, and I'll be with mates that are much more successful than me, but people will recognize me over them because they just are like, well, it's Will Clark with the beard. It's weird how it works, but it's fucking helped me out.
Yeah, great. Well, keep it then.
Yeah,
keep
it's not it. Going. Lucky otherwise, it'll make a job.
I have another question for you. Sorry, yeah. Will. Do you need to go?
No, I don't need to go.
I just have all the time. Okay. Have you got any, who would you give a tip Right, let me rephrase this question. Lucky that I'm not hosting this interview. any up-and-coming DJs that you could, like, recommend that we go listen to? Have you got any, like, good hints and tips on that one? Because everyone's always looking for new guys.
A-Vision, I'm really vibing with. Made in Paris. I'm really interested to see what Amara comes up with.
Yeah, me too.
We've got a record together that we've done, and she's great. I really like working with her. On the more, like, a little bit more commercial side of things, Amy L, I'm really interested to see what she's doing in the especially in the UK. I think she could be doing some really interesting stuff.
Quite a few.
I really like what Dents and Pika are doing on their label. Mm-hmm. Unneeded Pains, The Basque, High Brazel. Everything's just fucking great on that label.
Yeah.
But also, I'm really bad because I've literally took a year of not listening to any house music. And
who are you?
Well, I've just been making it, so I'm like, I don't want to listen to it. I didn't buy music until the week before my show, and that was the first time.
Oh, really?
It was the first time I bought house music.
And did you, like, trawl back through everything that had been released, or did you just go through what was sent to you recently, promos and stuff?
So I do my Spotify playlist every week. So I kept there's an old Will Clark Spotify playlist. So I put everything in there each week. So I went through that and kind of
guest appearance.
Got some hey little man or little. Who is that?
This is Rufus.
Rufus. Hi, hi. Rufus. Legend. Yeah, what about you? Who are you trying to be an agent for?
Oh, no one actually. I'm not on the pickup for anybody right now. I am fully stocked. I'm happy with my guys I really definitely can't take on anyone else. Mm. And we do get asked quite a lot, and Will sends around people that might be of interest. And it would really have to, sorry, I've got cat hair in my mouth.
That's all right.
Someone would really, really have to, like, float my boat for me to be interested or be making me a shit ton of money, one or the other, because it would take time out of everything else, you know. And right now, like, time is precious, and there's only so much you can do in a day. And I'd rather give myself to everybody that I've got. And that's often the answer when people ask, like, have you got any room, or are you interested? And it's often like, it would be unfair to the people on my roster to take on anyone else, or it would be unfair to the person that I'm taking on.
Totally.
Because I don't really have the time to offer you what you need, especially when it comes to smaller guys, which is a shame. But we do have an emerging talent roster at NGE, which is great. And it's headed up by Andre. And it's people who are coming up through the ranks who need that, like, really good hustle out there, and who don't necessarily have a name for themselves at all, but are amazing.
It's tough. It's especially nowadays.
Everything's changed now.
Changed, and also everyone is a DJ or a producer, and it's like, well,
you can move to Berlin. Well, everyone is a DJ. Like, everybody.
Yeah.
There's nobody that isn't. Since I moved to Berlin, I started DJing. Like, that's the influence it has. Mm. Badly, I would say, but you know, but everybody is. Like, everybody you meet. And maybe that's just the people I hang around with, but it is.
But you're probably right, because it's the industry that you're in, so you attract those types of people. But it is how it is. It's like you'll meet people that go to the raves, and then 6 months later they're DJing and producing. It's great. It's fucking amazing, because it means that there's more out there, and it's great to see, like, more women do it. If you know what I mean, like, there needs to be some fucking great women producers, and so the lineups can be good. And
but the whole industry is like sausage fest. You know what I mean? Like, from the crowds to the people who work behind the scenes. You know, like, you look at our company. You know, there's three women.
Yeah,
three. Mm, yeah, like, all the assistants are boys, men. Oh, that's my doorbell. Can I go and answer
the
door?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. I know who it is, but... Sorry.
No worries.
But I live on the ground floor, so apparently I'm postman for the whole building. Everybody. I've had such dramas with the German Post this week, but anyway, that's a whole nother boring story.
I would have thought the German Post is like a smooth running machine.
Will, German efficiency is a fucking myth. It's the biggest myth that's ever been peddled ever.
Don't lie to me, Joe.
There is nothing efficient about this country unless you think efficient is having to fill in a million forms. Oh my God, it's the worst. It's actually the worst. And I think that we have the opinion that it's good, it just makes it 10 times worse. It's so bad. But it's also a city that is very much stuck in like 20 years ago. Yeah, like so much. Me and Neil are always like, it's like some town in the 90s. Like, it's just...
I find that about America as well.
Yeah. But when you come from like London, where I haven't lived there for 5 years, but where it's like majorly efficient in so many ways. I think if we'd lived in like... outside of London, it probably would have been that much of a culture shock when we got here. But we were literally like, wow, this takes ages to do anything.
No, I think England's super efficient for the infrastructure. I think it actually works really well. But I just think people in England don't realise how lucky they've got it.
No, not at all. Even down to like the simple things like the NHS, like, you know, we have health insurance over here and you have to pay for it. Mm. And you already get taxed, like... 45%, then you have to pay your pension and your health insurance on top. It comes out about 60% of your salary.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yay, great.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a cheap place to live. The Germans are, like, Germany is, like, a wealthy place in terms of, well, everywhere but Berlin. But there are, I'm trying to think of some benefits.
Yeah, but the thing with Berlin is it's just full of artists, which is why it's not wealthy. It's just full of creative people.
And it doesn't have that financial district. Yeah. And in London, you have that financial district that you have the opportunity to go and earn a shit ton of money, whereas that just isn't here. But that also keeps it with a lot more, like, just a lot more free-thinking people, you know? Yeah, you don't necessarily have to have a lot of money. Although there's a bit of a gentrification issue going on here. There's a flat... There's flat issues with there's not enough, and then they're putting the prices up, and everyone's like, this is outrageous. You're like, you live in a capital city.
Yeah.
Like, and Berlin is the only capital city in Europe that if you took it out of the country would become richer. Mm. Every other capital city, like if you took London out of the UK, the whole country would get poorer. Yeah. But Berlin probably won't recover from what happened with the wall for another 100 years.
No, I totally agree. It's mental. It's a crazy. A lot of shit's happened in Germany.
I mean, the German history, like obviously since we've been here, I didn't even realise when somebody spoke to me about the wall, I just thought it was a wall that ran across, but actually no, it went round, obviously, because it kept people in. And I was like, I just don't understand. I thought, why don't people just get to the end of it and go round the other side? And no, that's not how it works. And then like moving here, obviously watching the documentaries and like visiting all the monuments and stuff. And you just think like, fuck man, like these people have been through so much.
It's 40 years ago.
They've had the 30th anniversary of the wall coming down since we've lived here. Yeah. And then so you think when you get in a taxi driver, getting a taxi with a taxi driver who's like say 60, he lived when the wall was up.
And he might have been on that side.
Yeah. And so you just think, wow. And this is only then like whether like 40 years since World War II and World War I, and you just think, wow. And this is something that we're learning about on our courses, like generational trauma and things that get carried down into like lineage and like how they can affect you. And you just think, well, of course the city's grumpy. Of course it's like moody because it's had like, they've been oppressed for a long time, you know, even though it's not happening now, like these people were held hostage basically. It's crazy.
It's mad.
But also makes it unique. You know, it's unique to what it is. Like the place where we live is the first place where people populated after the wall went down.
Okay.
So the actual site of the wall or one of the sites is not that far from us. We have a place called Mauer Park, which means wall park.
Mm.
And it was one of the first places to come, to be repopulated because everywhere was like around the wall. It's like no one lived because they didn't want to live there. So everyone came back and started living here again. But now it's like one of the like fanciest areas in the East. And it's been really gentrified. Like you probably hear there's kids outside, there's a playground. But there's no clubs because they weren't protected. They first started up as like squats and like place. And then the residents were like, no, we're not having them. So there's zero clubs in Prenzlauerberg. Whereas if you go to Kreuzberg or Friedrichshain or Wedding or any of those other places, there's clubs there, because then they became protected. They were part of the culture, part of society. Whereas they weren't when this. So there's like zero clubs here, which is great. It suits me really well.
It's perfect. If you live there, you don't want a club on your doorstep, do you? No one wants that.
We used to live right next to Berghain. And that may or may not have been the year that I went there every weekend. Like, shall we just pop there and like see where they let us in? And invariably they always let us in. And I went from like going there dressed like quite normally like this, like I'd go out in the evening, to having like my Berghain wardrobe, like harnesses and little dresses and like bras with just like X's over my boobs and like just properly dressing up in there.
Did you make Neil wear a harness as well?
No, he just always went topless, always.
Really?
Yeah, you've met Neil. Like, Neil gets... Everybody tries it on with Neil. Like, every gay guy tries it on with Neil. Like, and he used to be at the bar, like, chatting to these guys. And he's like, I've just been bought, like, four different drinks. I'm like, you need to walk away from the situation. I was like, this isn't okay. And I was like, if someone offers you a drink in Berghain, don't accept it unless you're going to go to the toilet with them. You know, unless you're going to head into the dark rooms. And he's like, yeah, but they just keep buying me drinks. I'm like, no. And like, people just walking up to him on the dance floor and like giving him a hug. And he's like, and he's so huggy and lovely. And like, he was just like, yeah, we're hanging out. I'm like, yeah, I'll come with you. Where should we go? And I'm like, no. And I'll be like, hi, I'm his fiance. You can see their face just be like,
huh, oh, damn.
Well, that's a waste of time. Okay.
I love it. It's like literally the tables have turned. Like, every other club is like guys trying to hit on girls, right? And this is the one place, well, not the only place, but the
very much so.
Yeah,
very much.
I love that. I think that's let's end it on Neil getting hit on in Berghain.
Yeah. It's a great vision. The things that I've seen in that club, honestly.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Like, eye-watering stuff. I'm like, poof, mate, rather you than me, for sure. Like, serious stuff. Like, when it started to become normal, that's when I was like, this is time to start walking away from this crowd.
When,
like,
when I saw you in Berlin last, actually, we went out with Terry from Beatport, and he was telling us about some nights in other, like, outside of Berghain. And he was talking about a night called Fist Fridays. And I was like, yeah, it's going to be an interesting night.
I think this is the one that's in the lab, and like people just like get out like a blanket and like lay it out, and they're like, hey, this is all my apparatus and this is all my lube, would you like to be fisted? And it's like, oh my god, like, wow.
Guys have like this is what guys are like, right? There's just no filter. And when you put two guys together that are both attracted to each other, it's just like, game on. Do what the fuck you want.
Yeah. I mean, they all always look like they're having fun. So, you know, if you're having fun, you're having fun. I actually did go in the dark rooms once with my friend. Like, we were like, let's hold hands and go in here. And we walked in, and like, literally everyone just grabs you. And I was just like, oh my God. And we were in there about 20 seconds and we just walked out again. And I was like, okay, experience. But never again. But there are stories of people getting pregnant from like things they got up to in the dark room. Which is like,
yeah, that's dark.
Yeah, right. It's dark.
Let's wrap this motherfucker up. Thank you so much. It's been like amazing to talk. I've loved it.
Oh,
thank you
so much. I've had such a nice chat with you. It's been so nice to talk properly as well.
It's been ages.
Just like work.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you so much for inviting me here.
See you soon. How can people follow you and do all of that as well?
Yeah, I am Joanna Barber on Instagram. That's it, really. And then you can sign up to my newsletter if you want to join the Zero Experiment, or you can just follow me for all my sober chat. I mean, it's wonderful. It's very inspiring, though. I promise.
It is. Joe, keep safe. Thank you so much. Yeah, love you, mate. Thank you. Bye. And it is a wrap. I loved that conversation. It was amazing. I hope you did. Please go share it, subscribe, do all of the usual bits. Keep safe. Have a great week. See you next time.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work. Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.